comes through that they have four kids. And one of them, I shook her hand and I said, so, it was in September, I said, how do you like in high school? She looked at me and she goes, you know, I'm in college now. Unfortunately, her dad bailed me out. He goes, you know, once you're over 40, everybody looks young.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought, well.
Don't blink.
Yeah.
The Senate will please come to order. Roll call.
Roll call for Wednesday, February 24th. Anderson?
Here.
Barnard?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Boner?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Oh, excuse me.
Excused. Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Kraft?
Here.
Dockstetter?
Here.
Driscoll?
Here.
Emmerich?
Here.
Esquivel?
Here.
Geis?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Hicks?
Here.
Johnson?
Excuse.
Kinski?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Meyer?
Here.
Pappas?
Here.
Perkins?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Ross?
Here.
Rothfuss?
Here.
Scott?
Here.
Baumflatern?
Here.
Wasterberger?
Here.
President Nicholas?
Here.
28 present, 2 excused.
Reverend Marston, would you please lead us in prayer?
Yes, sir. Let us pray. Our Lord in heaven, we come to you on this day asking for wisdom and patience and guidance. Our Lord, we know you created all things seen and unseen, hung all the stars in the sky, placed everything in the world in its place. But our Lord, we know that sometimes we feel our problems are so difficult that no one can control them. But our Lord, we know you can. No problem is so great that you cannot help us. And our Lord, we know that there's nothing that will happen today that we cannot handle with you. For these things we pray through Jesus Christ. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Play ball. We're at that order of business of reading correction of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report.
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 23, 2016 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Wasserberger, Chairman.
You've heard the report. Are there any objections?
I will.
There being none, the report is adopted. Let's see. Our doctor of the day is Dr. Brandon Mack, MD. Dr. Brandon, not here from Rock Springs. There's no nurse. Day in Wyoming history, 1941, the 115th Cavalry Regiment, Wyoming National Guard, inducted into federal service. Session status, today is day 13 of the proposed 20-day session, 7 days left. Friday will be the last day for bills to be reported out of committee in the second house. And do we have the poet laureate here yet, or... So you'll let me know. Thank you. Senator Meyer.
May I have privilege of floor?
You may.
Fellow senators, we have visiting from the great town of Torrington today. The senior class of the government class, please help me welcome the Torrington Trailblazers
in right.
The Senate. Hey, guys.
Welcome. We're glad to have you, and Senator Meyer needs all the help he can get. Let's see. I think we're at that order of business of messages from the House.
from the House of Representatives, February 23, 2016, message number 5. Mr. President, the House has completed consideration of the General Appropriations Bill, H. Bill 1. Pursuant to J.R. 14-1, H.B. 1 is referred directly to a conference committee of 5 members from each House to meet and report recommended amendments for final consideration by both Houses with respect to General Appropriation Bills SF 1, Senate File 1, and House Bill 1, and the amendments thereto. Signed, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Any other messages? Any reports from standing committees? Okay, we'll do House bills on first reading. Did we get those back from? Did you get the bills back from Ellen? Great, or from Brian? House bills on first reading. House bill number 11, first reading the bill.
House Bill number 11, Energy Producing States Coalition Extension, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. It passed the House, ayes 60.
House Bill number 11 is signed to Committee number 9, Minerals. House Bill 49, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 49, Abandoned Vehicles 2, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, passed the House, ayes 58, noes 2.
House Bill 49 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill Number 50, first reading the bill.
House Bill number 50, Appropriation for the Legislature, sponsored by the Management Council, passed the House, ayes 53, noes 7.
House Bill number 50 is referred to Committee number 12, Rules. House Bill number 57, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 57, Upper Payment Limit Program, Private Hospitals, sponsored by the Labor Committee.
Did they forget to vote on it? So what happens when the House postpones all their bills to the end, they forget to vote.
48 ayes, 12 noes, passed the House.
House Bill 57 assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. House Bill 58, first reading the bill.
House Bill 58, Human Trafficking, Forfeiture of Property, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, passed the House, ayes 60.
House Bill 58 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill Number 74, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 74, Upper Payment Limit Program, Public Nursing Homes, sponsored by the Labor Committee. Passed the House, ayes 46, noes 14.
House Bill number 74 is assigned to Committee number 10, Labor. House Bill number 19, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 19, Statewide Student Assessment, sponsored by the Statewide Education Committee. Passed the House, ayes 51, noes 9.
House Bill number 19 is referred to Committee number 4, Education. I think we're now at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
February 24, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, to whom was referred House Bill 54, Treasury Offset Program Statutory Reference Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
This is Rose here. It's Rose Hill. Folks, joining us today to share some of her work is Wyoming's Poet Laureate, A. Rose Hill. We're delighted to have you. She was appointed by Governor Meade in July and is here this morning to read her poem titled Wyoming Hometown. Rose is a graduate of Sheridan High School and Sheridan College. Her poetry is written in free verse and reflects her focus on family, community, life, and the West, and nature. Please help me welcome Wyoming's Poet Laureate, Rose Hill. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is just a signal honor for me. Let me see. First, I want to say how much I admire each one of you for giving your time and your effort, your thought to this work that you do here in the Senate and the House of Representatives. You're just senators, though, aren't you?
That's all we are.
We're not just senators, that's for sure. I want to tell you that I feel like Wyoming is, as someone said, a very small town with a very long Main Street, and we're really a community. Representative Berger, when she first came to Sheridan, I won't say how long ago, quite a while ago, she rented a house for my husband and me. And when I first came to Sheridan, I got a job as a maid for the Kendricks at the mansion. Of course, this was long after the senator and the governor had passed away. But still, I lived there for 2 years and worked, went to school, graduated high school, and lived there. So I want to read to you a couple poems, if you'll bear with me. And I pulled a switch on the title. I said, this is Hometown, Wyoming. After school, third grader Abby asked, Grandma, can we make a quilt? Jamie's house burned down, and she has no blankets. Neighbors took the family in. Hometown folk brought food and clothes. Mrs. Jones offered a home at 10 cents on the dollar, appliances included. A spaghetti dinner earned some cash. Abby tied her soft pink quilt with satin ribbon to match, tucked a teddy bear inside. Whence comes this urge to help? From the breezes, generous breezes, off Wyoming's mountain peaks, in the luminous quality of light, passed down father to son, mother to daughter. Where are these caring folk found? Hometown everywhere, Wyoming. And another one, just kind of to end with a smile. Cowboy in disguise. The time of the cowboy is gone, you say? And with it that working man of a westerday? Well, I saw the cowboy downtown today. He's hard at work in another way. He reins in his horses with a steering wheel, and now his Stetson has a harder feel. His high-top boot with the dogger heel now laces tight from toe of steel. The shirt looks the same right down to the rip, and the same mustache guards his upper lip. But the belt that held the gun at his hip now holds a hammer or a welder's tip. There's a telltale clue that identifies that self-same cowboy in another guise. Is there a one of us who won't recognize those same old bow-legged blue Levi's? Thank you.
Rose, thank you very much for joining us today. We sure appreciate you taking the time out to come.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're delighted. Thank you. Work that order of business of bills on second reading. Second reading of the Senator Meyer.
The floor.
You have some more help?
Yes, I need some more help, Mr. Chairman. We're going to get it, and myself and all of us from the good. There they are. See you guys. Parks and Trailblazers. Out the door.
Everybody, welcome. Sorry, I guess we didn't catch him quite early enough.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, well, that's Senator Perkins.
No, I just need a page, Mr. President. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Would you like me to come down and get that for you?
If you want, if he's...
Bills on second reading. House Bill number 2, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 2, Electric Vehicle Decal.
There are no amendments. There appears to be no discussion. House Bill number 2 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be heard or read 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 28, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 28, Cease and Transfer Program Local Government Funding.
There is no amendments. There appears to be no discussion. House Bill 28. Having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 32, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 32, Insurance Regulation Parity.
There appears to be no amendments, no discussion. House Bill 32, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 52, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 52, School Facilities Appropriations 3.
There are no amendments. Appears to be no discussion. House Bill 52, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list. It's not very long, but I move the consent list to consist of the following House bills. House Bill 10, Clean Water Revolving Fund Amendments. House Bill 55, Nurse Licensure Compact 1. House Bill 56, Advanced Practice Nurse Licensure Compact. And House Bill 59, Health Care Statutory Compliance.
Would any of the members like any of those bills removed from the consent list? There being no request, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 10, Clean Water Revolving Fund Amendments. House Bill 55, Nurse Licensure Compact Hyphen 1. House Bill 52, Labor Advanced Practice Nurse Licensure Compact. House Bill 59. Let me restate the last one. House Bill 56, Nurse Practice, Advanced Practice Nurse Licensure Compact. House Bill 59, Healthcare Statutory Compliance. Would the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case excused, Christensen?
Aye.
C- Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escabel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson excused. Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross. Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
On the consent list, 28 aye, 2 excused. House Bill 10, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 10, 28 aye, 2 excused. House Bill 55, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 55, 28 aye, 2 excused. House Bill 56, are there any changes? Coe, aye to no. Barnard, aye to no. Pappas, aye to no. Emmerich, aye to no. Closing vote. Anderson, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 56, 23 aye, 5 no, 2 excused. House Bill 59, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 59, 28 aye, 2 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate Files 10, 55. Thank you. Let me begin that again. Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bills 10, 55, 56, and 59 have passed the Senate. Our thoughts are with Senator Case, and I'm heartened to know that every one of his excused votes represents a no. I think he's heartened to do it, know that as well. Is that all? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the Senate. What we're going to do, if you look up on the board, we have two bills that are ready for general file, so we'll be bouncing in and out of general file, excuse me, trying to get the other bills read in so we can work at least 8 or 10 bills today. That's the plan, Mr. President. And with that, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole to discuss two bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senator Wasserberger.
Ooh, there's gates up here.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File House Bill 46. Would the reading clerk please read the House bill?
House Bill number 46, Investment of Workers' Compensation Account. An act relating to workers' compensation sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. Was referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 46. And I think I yield to the Vice President.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 46 is a General Appropriations Internal Committee study. What this really does is, more or less, in my mind, to some degree, it's, for the most part, I think it's more of a technical correction than anything. The heart of the bill, if you turn to page 2 with me, what you find there is we're replacing the director with the state treasurer, and then you have this qualified independent investment manager. So what we're all this really bill is attempting to do is make sure that we understand that we have, last time I looked, it was about $1.5 billion in the workers' compensation fund. And what this is trying to make sure that this is the state treasurer who is overseeing the investment of those items. And he does that consistent with the investment policy developed by the State Loan and Investment Board, which is what you see on lines 12 and 13 and 14 there. And so then the other thing that it does is it provides for the state treasurer in consultation with the director of the agency will report to the joint Appropriations Committee about the workers' compensation account and the projected status of the account during the five-year period. And so, again, what that does is trying to make sure that this investment account has different objectives and different purposes than the permanent trust fund or other accounts that are out there, and trying to make sure that it's invested appropriate with the goals and the purposes of the workers' compensation fund, and also looking at potential burdens and cash flow issues so that over a five-year period to make sure that it's always liquid enough to pay the claims and any anticipated claims, as well as can you protect that value for the employers and the people of the state of Wyoming. With that explanation, I ask for your favorable consideration and would stand for questions.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And he answered my question partially about we sure have a big enough reserve to handle the claims. How much is that? I'm just curious how much they set aside.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, I'm unaware of that right now. I'll see if I can get that answer and have that for us at second reading.
Any further debate?
Something like that.
I'm sorry. Senator Scott. And then
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
The 45% figure that's in the law as it comes to us is probably very conservative in terms of investment in the stock market. These claims, many of them have great big long tails on them, will stretch out over as many as 30 years, some of them, and many of them are out over a considerable period of time. I think, if anything, 35% may be a little too conservative, but you do have to have a cash reserve to pay things as the market fluctuates. And looking as we have in Committee 10, where we keep an eye on workers' comp, because that's one of the things normally in our jurisdiction, they're fine. And the statutory 45% gives us a great margin.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I should know this, but what's the amendment that the House put on? I can't see it.
Senator Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, my recollection, I looked that up when we had it in committee, and my recollection was what they did is they basically had the State Loan Investment Board, they changed it, and they had the State Loan Investment Board in another place. Mostly it was grammatic in that they had, I think it said in consultation with the State Loan and Investment Board, and then invested in policies or investments consistent with the investment policy. So all they really did is kind of reorganize the deck chairs a little bit, as my recollection on the change.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion to adopt the Standing Committee House Bill 546, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 46 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our Yes, you may. Senator Kinski.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined here today by the leadership classes of Leadership Johnson County and Leadership Sheridan. Let's give them a warm welcome. That's all behind us. Yeah, it's been 100 years.
To those good people from Johnson County, it's one of my favorite areas in the world. I go there all the time, so welcome to the House. Welcome to the Senate. I keep forgetting. I'm a big boy. I'm a big boy now. I'm a big boy now. Okay. The next bill for our consideration. Mr. President, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Floor.
Granted.
Mr. Chairman, about 7 or 8, 9 years ago, when I came over to the Senate, and we went down there for the governor's talk, my fellow senator down here talking to Senator Meyer, when I was hanging around, said, come with me, you're not in this place anymore, you're in the Senate, so you're in the Senate there, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not in Kansas anymore. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 54. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 54, Treasury Offset Program, Statutory Reference Amendments, an Act Relating to Labor and Employment, sponsored by the Labor Committee, was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee of the whole rise and report to you so the recommendation that House Bill 54 do pass. There were no amendments, standing committee, or otherwise.
Do you need it repeated, Mr.
Go ahead. Please do, Senator.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move from the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 54 do pass. There were no amendments, standing committee or otherwise, and I yield to Senator Boner for an explanation of the House bill.
Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, as you'll see, this is a fairly this bill is fairly to the point. It goes into the statute that deals with unemployment benefits, and it's specifically dealing with the payment of those benefits, and even more specifically, repayment of overpaid benefits, where there was some sort of mistake or some sort of fraud on the part of the individual as receiving unemployment benefits. This deals with the manner in which the state of Wyoming goes out and actually gets those funds back. So as part of the Budget Control Act of 2013, the Department of Workforce Services is already allowed to basically intercept an individual's tax refund from the federal government. And so that we're just putting that in statute, making sure that we comply with the federal requirement, and that is exactly what the bill does. So if anybody has any questions, I'd be more than willing to try and answer them.
Senator Nicholas.
No.
Is there any further debate? Any further questions? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion on House Bill 54, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 54 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as we read in 31, we have not. Mr. Chairman, I move the committee hold, beg leave to rise and sit again.
We will come to order at the sound of the gavel. No? I move that we rise and report.
Oh, no.
No.
Mr. Chairman, let's start over.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee hold, beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Thank God. Motion carried.
So we have some re-referrals. We have standing committee reports.
February 24, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, to whom was referred House Bill 63, Healthcare Facility Receivership Act, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February 24, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, to whom was referred House Bill 60, Engrossed, State Health Facility Missions, Statutory Compliance, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February 24, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 88, ETS Zero-Based Budget Sunset, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. February 24, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 85, Medical Education Funding, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. February 24, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 31, Engrossed, Uniform Securities Act, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. February 24, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 20, State Public Purpose Investments Reporting, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Scott, did you have some re-referral requests, or did anybody have any on those standing committee reports? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate resolve itself back in the committee of the whole to discuss bills on general file.
I just want to make sure, did any of the bills that standing reports that we had in, none of those get re-referred? All right. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senator Wasserberger.
Committee Hall will please come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 31. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 31, Uniform Securities Act, an act relating to the Uniform Securities Act, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman. Re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill, House Bill 31, Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee the whole rise and report, it do so with a do pass motion on House Bill 31. And for an explanation of the bill and the appropriation which came with it from the House, I will defer to the good senator from Cheyenne.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This good bill is brought to you by your joint Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions Interim Committee. We worked this bill during the interim, and I think it's a very important bill. This legislation covers registration and regulation of security offerings, stock brokers, brokerage firms, and investment advisors. It also provides provisions for exemptions and notice of filings of securities and offerings, fraud, liabilities, administration, judicial review, and transition. We have a current Wyoming Securities Act, but it was adopted in 1965, so it is over 50 years old. This new bill that you see here is a uniform act that we used. It's a model act that was drafted by the National Conference of Commissioners, and it has much needed modernization in it due to significant changes in technology that we've experienced, and increasingly interstate and international aspects of securities transitions. This bill has two basically large changes in it. Intrastate crowdfunding. You'll probably hear Wyoming Invests Now. The acronym is WIN. This is a new venture for small business and entrepreneurs to raise capital in Wyoming. It's only for Wyoming companies and Wyoming investors. Wyoming companies can raise up to $2 million in startup capital through this avenue. And it is an alternative to restrictive bank loans and other funding methods. And the other big change in this particular act is the investment advisor registration and regulation requirements. Wyoming currently is the only state that does not register or regulate investment advisors. Investment advisors are different than stockbrokers. You have to understand that. Stockbrokers make trades. Investment advisors provide advice or act as consultants as part of the regular business and for compensation. Advisors will be able to receive guidance, assistance, and maintain a working relationship within the state of Wyoming through this act. It's important to note that the Secretary of State's office invited about 400 people to two separate webinars and sent letters to all the interested parties. The division contacted all Wyoming investment advisor firms to let them know about the changes if this legislation passes. No negative feedback or concerns from the industry were received. So what I'd like to do real quickly, the bill, as you look at it, is fairly lengthy, so I'm not going to go through it in detail, but I'd like to just cover a little bit about the seven articles that were in the bill. So as we begin, the first article is basically the general provisions and definitions. They can be found on page 1 through 13 of the bill. So several new definitions were needed because of the change in the securities field since the last 50 years, since 65 when we adopted the first one. Pages you'll find on in Article 2, pages 13 through 35, are the exemptions. So they'll include exemptions from registering security offerings with intrastate crowdfunding section. And as I mentioned, As I mentioned to you, this is a great opportunity for small businesses to raise the capital that they need through this new article. Article 3, which you'll find on pages 36 to 49, discusses registration and notice filings of securities. If you cannot qualify for an exemption under Article 2, then you would either need to register or notice file your offering under this article, Article 3. Moving on to Article 4, you'll find that on pages 49 to 72 of the bill. This is about the people selling securities. It includes stockbrokers, brokerage firms, and the new registration and regulation of the investment advisors that I mentioned. Moving on, by the way, in that particular article, there wasn't an amendment that the House added to the bill since we worked it in the joint committee, and the substance of that was to raise the fees. They raised the $10 per year for the investment advisors. So instead of 35, they will be 45 per year, and the firms instead of 200 will be 250 per year. Our Senate committee was fine with that because that's standard amongst other states that are doing that. And it will raise over $1 million extra revenue. Article 5 discusses fraud and liabilities. You'll find that on page 72 through 82. This is better language on liability and rescission offers that along with a change in the statute of limitations. Article 6, pages 82 to 98, provides language regarding administration and judicial review. One point here is the civil penalties will be increased from $5,000 and $50,000, up from the old levels of $250 and $5,000. This would bring these penalties to a consistent level with the Wyoming Insurance Department. And then finally, the last section, Article 7, found on pages 98 and 99, this section discusses transition and explains that the predecessor act would still govern all actions and proceedings that are pending. This act will have an effective date of July 1, 2017. That gives the Secretary of State's office time to implement the change. And part of that change implementation is a requirement for them to rewrite their securities programming, their computer programming. So that is going to entail a one-time appropriation of $260,000. Now, it's important to know that this is special revenue. It is not general fund revenue. It comes from the Securities Enforcement Compliance Fund, and the fees, it's funded by fees collected under the Act. Hence the Appropriation Committee's approval of it. There also is a biennial request for $150,000, basically $75,000 a year, for one full-time auditor to conduct routine reviews of investment advisors. Since we weren't registering investment advisors prior to this time, we need this additional position, which again is fully paid for by the additional revenues that the Act raises, but they need that to audit these newly registered folks. The fund brings in almost $9 million per annum, and the fee change will bring in now more than $11 million per biennium. The fund is appropriated at $616,000 per biennium. I think that with that, I'll sit down and ask. Sit for questions. So I highly recommend that we pass this on.
Any further questions or comments? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Myers' motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 31, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 31 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 20. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 20, State Public Purpose Investments Reporting, an act relating to state public purpose investments, sponsored by the Management Audit Committee. Was referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 20, State Public Purpose Investments Reporting. There are no amendments on the bill, and to discuss further details about it, I would call on the Hansen Senator from Sheridan County. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
You are beautiful.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the Management Audit Committee came forward with three bills as a result of studies that deal with public purpose investments. This is the second one. If the body will recall, the last one had to do with large loan investments and IDBs and so forth. This has to do with what the Management Audit Committee found regarding the public purpose investments. And what we found was that even though we have a limit of $600 million out of these, there is no uniform reporting requirement among the various agencies that are involved in these. So that's what this committee, that's what this bill actually does. It designates the investments of permanent, these are out of the permanent mineral funds. So if you go turn to page 2, Mr. Chairman, the first thing that the bill does is it makes the reports, and this is to the Select Committee on Capital Financing and Investments, in case you're interested. It changes the reports from biannual to annual, and it brings in the report will be by the state treasurer, but it'll be in consultation with the SLIB board, the Wyoming Water Development Office, the Wyoming Business Council, and the Office of State Lands and Investments. And they will report, as I said, to the Select Committee on Capital Financing and Investment. And then when you move down to line 15, this is what shall be involved in the report. And it will list all investments and loan requests made the previous year, including those which are delinquent. Romanet 2, recommendations for future legislation, including recommendations for adjustments to the amounts allocated. Romanet 3, the cost of the investments to the people of Wyoming. In other words, and A is the administrative costs, and Amendment A is foregone earnings. In other words, the amount of money that the state treasurer could have made off these investments had not the legislature designated a specific loan, large projects, things like that. And then the select committee shall monitor state funds invested for specific purpose, and this is what authorizes the select committee to do so. And then there's an effective date of July 1st, 2016. Mr. Chairman, it brings some uniformity and standardization into these investments so that the legislature can keep a better eye on these public purpose investments. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Any questions for Senator Burns? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Asked this question in committee, and just to bring it to the body's attention, that when we look at lines 3, 8 through 10, the foregone earnings that could have been obtained by the funds, keep in mind we're talking about the permanent funds of the state. In particular, this is a carve-out of available money out of the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund that can be used or reinvested in these types of things. And that's no easy task. The foregone earnings is no easy task because it's not that easy to come up with a comparator determine what is the actual opportunity cost. And my concern, and I think this is a great bill, but my concern with that particular provision is I don't know the Treasurer's Office is capable of doing that. We've talked about this numerous times on the Select Committee for Capital Investments, CapFin, we call it, and that's a very interesting number. And so I'm not sure how we actually, maybe the Treasurer's office does that, and so maybe we can find out as this moves through. But that's not an easy task, and we've kind of been after that number for years, and it depends. Some years the markets are up, and some years the markets are down, and we've got fixed incomes, and we've got all kinds of things running around there. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, it is a useful question, but I think it also is a useful device. And after these, it can be used as a comparator. We're talking about foregone earnings, on page 3, line 8. And it can be used as a comparator between the other funds that the state treasurer has invested, what the return has been year in and year out versus what the legislatively designated investments have been. And I think that I don't know that it's necessarily at heart a figure to do, but I think it can serve as a cautionary tale to future legislatures about going into some of these investments when we want to designate them. Are we, for a policy decision, is this particular investment worth this loss in earnings from investment, but there may be some other tangible benefit to it.
Any further debate? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and just to follow up on that, just to bring the body's attention, the problem we have is when you look and when we forecast revenues, we forecast. Right now, the Treasurer's Office forecasts these funds, including the permanent trust funds in particular, at 2.1% is the return that they calculate off that. If you recall, we have a spending policy amount of 5%, and so if you get capital gains or you have earnings that get you between from 2.1 to 5%, that's one issue. But there's years that it's significantly in excess of that, and the Treasurer's Office. And for the most part, I think the legislature has agreed, as at least a majority, that you don't want to be profiling or estimating what those capital gains returns would be, and hence that creates the problem in determining what that fund is. So that could be 5%, it could be 6%. We could look at benchmarks. There's lots of things we could do. I'm just concerned that the language is maybe imprecise enough. It's going to cost. I don't know. I don't have anything to offer at this point that's better, but it may cause us some problems going forward that we may have to address in future sessions.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, it is the imprecision of language that keeps millions of lawyers in work.
Yay!
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 20, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 20 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 88. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill number 88, ETS Zero-Based Budget Sunset, an act relating to the administration of government, sponsored by Representative Stubson, was referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Ross.
Thank you, members of the Senate. I move House Bill 88, ETS Zero-Based Budgeting Sunset. This comes as a result of the work that we were doing in appropriations when we were going through the various budgets. And it became evident to us now that ETS has been longstanding and has been doing a pretty good job, that it was nearly impossible now to track what they're doing or their expenditures or anything else, because it comes in as a zero base, and then we have to start afresh from there.
And so it was a feeling of the sponsors here that that we really needed to remove the zero-based budgeting so in the future we can actually see, just as we can see all the other budgets, where their 100 series, with their 900 series, with their 600 series, we can see all of those things and be able to compare them over the long term, because right now you can't see that. And so that's the purpose of this bill, is to sunset that from being zero-based budgeting. So that's basically the bill.
Any further questions? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I can understand JAC's situation. When I was on it, it was a little cumbersome for ETS to come in. But one of the other reasons why we did that was to see whether or not we could change or modify our budgeting system to get a better understanding of the base of these as they came in. But I think our problem was is that we didn't require that history, and we didn't require the development of that basis we went forward. In fact, we don't require it in any of our budgets, because they essentially get to start with a standard budget, and we don't account for the deviations and the adjustments between the base and the standard budget. In a lot of budgets, we don't have that original base to go clear back into the previous biennium. So we don't see the growth in government because it's contained basically behind the door. Yes, was opening the door, but they never told us what was behind the previous door. So, you know, if this goes through, it may make it a little less cumbersome to deal with ETS, but still, in ETS and other budgets, we're not getting the information we need to know to really look at the historical use, how the government grew, and where it grew. And so we still need some help in this area, and probably have to go into the two sections referenced in the bill to modify those somewhat. And so, Mr. Chairman, I think that we need a lot of work to do. Vote it up or vote it down, I don't think it does a heck of a lot of difference either way, except for leaves a little bit of time for JAC when they look at ETS.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, honor for the amendment, or for the bill. The folks, when we start talking about the distinction between zero-based budgeting and exception-based budgeting, when properly implemented and when you exercise the discipline of the exception-based budget, it works as well as zero-based budgeting. We've tried the zero-based budgeting in the past, and what ends up happening, in fact, the best exercises I ever went, it was in the late 90s when we divided the legislature up into half. Half people look at revenues and half expenditure, and the expenditure committees went and looked at every agency, every program, and tried to eliminate it. After a year of this exercise, we came back and said there's no program that could be eliminated. So the notion of exception-based budget, though, is that you, once we appropriate it and we authorize the engagement of a certain level of personnel, that's static, and we review the programs to take it up and down depending on whether changes are modified. But nothing gets added to the staff without an exception request, and that's how we control the size of government, is by the exceptions issues. With respect to this agency, the ETS, we formed the agency and took a variety of employees from around different agencies that were in their IT departments, brought them together to consolidate and try to get a better product served. And at the beginning, we wanted to make sure that we had some sort of zero-based analysis to go back and say, was that a good deal? Was it appropriate? Did we confine or constrain the size of this entity to those that required to be in the agency? Did we strip out employees that maybe we should return them to the agencies? Well, at this point, we've hit sort of a static level. So the part that should be standardized would be the budget as their staff are today, and that's standardized. Now, what we want to do is make sure that the exception base is the request for replacement for computers and ongoing equipment. So the JAC will have discretion to say, look, these things are always exceptions. You have to ask for exception requests for equipment, for your contracts, for servicing, purchasing new equipment. But with respect to the cost of the agency and the employees, we now have enough experience to know that the entity did not grow. We pulled in the employees from other agencies. We've reduced their FTE counts in the outside agencies. We've consolidated them. We know where we're at. Part of the problem with not making a standard budget, though, is that when you begin to look at your structural deficit that we've looked at, and you say, okay, well, I have this much money to spend. Well, if you've got a major agency that's not in your calculation, it becomes a big surprise to some that says, oh, I forgot $100 million worth of agency that I can't eliminate, I've got to have. And so from a planning point of view, there comes a time where, since we are doing standard-based budgeting, it's better to have that agency inside all your projection, all your forecasts, so you know what it costs you. With respect to the ongoing and the variable costs, certainly those variable costs go into the a requirement for an exception-based request. But the fixed cost of those employees, and they are permanent employees, should be in the standard budget. Thank you.
Any further comments? Senator Meyer.
Just briefly, that there is an automatic adjustment between the base and the standard budget every year of just different factors, I mean, inflation factors and other things. But in zero-based budgeting, you actually get to look at those because you start at zero every year. In the standard-based budgeting that we have now, they're just kind of included in there, and they're kind of variable in as far as different factors about how much the growth of government goes up without actually getting anything. Because the question is asked, what do you have to do to provide the same services that you did the previous year? And it just floats in there without you seeing it. And that's something we need to take a look at. But like I say, it does make a lot of difference. I think the biggest gain is that it takes less time to do this in JAC if you do a standard-based budget than zero-based budget, because it just takes more time to go through the process.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I also recollect that this particular department, ETS, this is technology, and it's ongoing. It's always new. And so that was the reason, part of the reason for the zero-based budgeting was coming back. The danger that we face in standard budget, thinking the exception request was to take care of that new technology, is the standard budget includes the old technology. And very seldom is that questioned. And so this department in particular, I think it would be more effective to keep it to the zero-based budget and to come in each and every budget session and explain their current expenditures and requests. And I think that was the big reason for this particular department, was the ongoing technology and the advancement that they're continually dealing with. And so on against the bill.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 88, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
House Bill 88 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill... Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much. While we're taking a little break from these bills, could I have a privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, sometimes I know we have a lot of different groups that do a lot of different things, and one of them is our Wyoming Cultural Trust Fund. And I don't know if you've ever known some of the amazing work they have done, but they gave a grant a couple of years ago to, in my opinion, certainly the best photographer in Southwest Wyoming, and possibly the best photographer I've ever known, who used it to compile a photo book of Wyoming's Red Desert. And the things that are different about this is, number one, it's 25 years of work by the same photographer, and number two, it's the only existing black and white photography book of the Red Desert. When we come back from lunch, you will each have your own signed copy of this book at your desk. And that is not through the generosity of anyone except the author himself. And I would like you to meet him. He's in the gallery. Paul Ng. Yeah. And the other partner in publishing this book was Sweetwater Boces. So the guide who knows every rock that is in the Red Desert is Johnny Bass. So I want to personally thank them and hope you enjoy your books. Thank you.
Welcome to the Senate, and thank you very much for the book. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 85. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 85, Medical Education Funding, an act relating to higher education, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 85, Medical Education Funding. This is brought to you by your Joint Appropriations Committee. During the interim, when we're working this budget, they basically came to us with an exception request. We decided to put it into law, and that's what this bill does. Let me just explain a little bit. The WIAMI program, which is our YDANT programs, this bill deals with both of them, but particularly the UW Medical Education. Due to some accreditation requirements, the University of Washington is currently undergoing a substantial overhaul of its undergraduate medical curriculum. The new curriculum will emphasize more integration of clinical relevance and foundational science and more clinical skills instruction, a shift from lecture-based methods to active learning, and greater emphasis on primary care clinical preceptor experiences. As a result of these changes, WIAMI students will be spending an additional semester in the Laramie campus starting in the fall of fiscal year 2018. So what we learned during our hearings was that students pay in about, they pay a tuition of about $12,240 per year to attend medical school. And those payments are actually paid into an endowment fund right now. There's currently $10 million in the endowment fund. But to make and to accommodate the new WIAMI plan, they're proposing to use from those tuition payments about $157,820 per year will go into the endowment. And the endowment is fully flush and actuarially sound, and $1.3 million will go to new curriculum costs. And so this bill basically sets up that mechanism so that we can continue to operate the WIAMI program and with the new requirements from the University of Washington. So what it does is on page 2, you'll see that on Romanet I, originally, the language says it authorizes the state to pay all tuition costs, and we change that to a portion of the cost of attendance, which is actually what they've been doing. And any amounts other than fees and tuition paid by these students in accordance shall be deposited into a special fund. Now, one of the other things that is paid into this endowment account is if a student does not come back and fulfill their requirements to the state of Wyoming, then they have to repay us back. So we don't change any of that or anything like that. The endowment stays fully flush, and we use these funds to pay for the new curriculum costs. So We also specified what these funds can be used for. The endowments can be used for relocation costs associated with the practice in Wyoming, fees and materials, board examinations, rural training, dislocation, and student development. We set a cap on page 3, lines 13 through 18. The amount of income expended annually pursuant to this section shall not exceed an amount equal to 4% of the 5 previous year average market value of the fund. Any expended income shall remain in the fund. And then there's a report to the Appropriations Committee. And then the rest of the bill deals with the YDENT and does the very same thing with the YDENT program. It's a lot smaller. It's a lot different. But we just made sure that they both are operating on the same footing. And that is the bill, and I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Well, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, questions with respect to the bill and what was intended. So we created this trust fund over time, and for all practical purposes, folks, the trust fund was created because the state of Wyoming has paid a disproportionate amount of the tuition for students, and so we've paid a higher percentage of students. We've taken student fees. We've created this this trust fund. We've collected dollars, reimbursements for students that have come back and chosen to pay out or buy out their obligation to practice for the 3 years. And as we created the trust fund, if I go back to the beginning of the creation of the Wyoming program, I'm not sure that we had a firm idea of what the trust fund was going to be used for, other than it was going to be used for the success and to maintain the program. It concerns me a little bit now that so the state of Wyoming pays a tuition to the University of Washington. Washington then, as I understand it, reimburses the University of Wyoming for that first year and some of the costs for actually educating kids, or not kids, but young adults on our campus for 1 year, and now it's for the extended 1.5 year. What it's unclear to me, though, is whether or not we're now reaching into this trust fund that was intended for something that we really haven't articulated about, to reduce the University of Washington's cost as opposed to trying to find our solutions. We have problems on campus with respect to where we're going to house these students as they stay 1.5 years. We have a group now looking at what could be a capital facility cost because since students are now going to be on campus longer, our original medical study facilities were not large enough to house 2 years worth of students. And I guess my question is, one is, can we articulate what the original reason for the trust fund is? How is it to be used? Was it to be used to subsidize student costs, or was it to subsidize our cost? Was it to be there for the program modifications such as we're encountering now for large facilities? Or was it intended to be used to lower the University of Washington's cost for teaching on our campus when they elected to send more of the education back to Wyoming? So what's the overall goal? Where are we going? And does this modification lead to the exhaustion of those funds without our oversight?
Any further debate?
Senator Ross.
Thank you. Well, the testimony, my recollection of the testimony in committee was that this will not exhaust the fund. This basically, we're creating a statute that incorporates what they've actually been doing. Some of us thought, when you read the statute, that the state of Wyoming, that the students, they signed an agreement authorizing the state to pay all the tuition costs. Well, in fact, they were not. They're paying in. Each student is paying in, and They have been using this endowment for a lot of these things, like relocation costs and so forth. What they're suggesting now is because of the change in the curriculum, and there's need in Laramie for additional monies for these students to use some of that to prop up this new system where they're going to be here for another extra semester. But in answer to the question, I cannot tell you from historically why that fund was set up in the way in which it was. It's an endowment. But the testimony is that really the endowment has been being used and will continue to be being used. We just put some sideboards on that so that they can't take it and just wean it down and wean it down and wean it down. So that's the best explanation I can give you, unless other members in the Appropriations Committee know. But that's the best explanation I can give you. Maybe Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins.
Just a few things so we can differentiate on the bill. So if you go to page 2 under Romanet 1, what you're looking there is you're authorizing the state of Wyoming to pay all tuition costs. That's what it used to say. Incurred in his or her medical education as determined by any contract between the state of Wyoming and the School of Medicine providing that education. So in these cases, we're mostly talking about the University of I don't know if I should say it on the floor, but we all know where about Northwestern State that's in. So as you go through there and you look at the contract, in addition to the there's tuition costs, but there are substantial amounts of fees that can be several thousands of dollars that are not specifically authorized. There are books that are not specifically authorized, and then there's these other costs and expenses. Obviously, room and board or living expenses are all part of cost of attendance, and that's when you go and look. You're looking at these costs of attendance. So, rightly or wrongfully, the University of Wyoming has determined that tuition covered fees and other things like that. So what this does is it creates and allows the authorized state of Wyoming to pay all or a portion of the cost of attendance. So there's no direction there to pay all that cost of attendance. They have to manage their program. But it does allow some additional money to cover the costs of those fees and things. So in I think in direct answer to the question is partially yes, it lowers the cost of, I don't know that it, obviously the tuition and fees that are paid go to the university. The student's going to pay those or the state's going to pay those. And it also allows, but it expands it beyond the tuition costs. The effort is if we want to facilitate these doctors, we can make that policy decision whether that's too broad and whether we should rein that back in. That's a little bit of a policy decision that needs to be made there, whether it should be cost of attendance or whether we should expand it specifically or put limiters on there that would, it could be fees, it could be books, it could be there's lab costs, those types of things. When you go to subsection subsection E on there, when you talk about other fees of tuition and payments, these are paid by the medical students. This is about a little over $12,000, almost $12,500 a year that comes back that they pay, and that's kind of their version of paying in-state tuition, if you will, if we had a medical school. But they pay that amount, and that goes into the special fund designated by the medical student fund, designated the medical student fund, maintained separately and accounted for by University of Wyoming, which fund may be added to specific contributions from other sources. So it's also clarifying that when they pay these fees, where this $12,000 and change that these students pay per year to the University of Wyoming, where that goes and what's done with that. And that continues on. In addition to that, then this endowment out there, we've got this, they invest that, and they have this production of income. And then this investment income that comes out of this is kind of a different subject, but this investment income that comes out of this endowment then can be used for relocation costs associated with practice in Wyoming, fees and materials for medical board examinations, rural training, dislocations, student development, and scholarships to medical students as authorized by the University of Wyoming and the Dean of College of Health Sciences.
So what that is doing is trying to provide opportunities when these folks were up there coming back to Wyoming and able to round and do their clinical rounds in the state of Wyoming, or if they're moving back after they finish their residencies and are trying to come back and relocate in Wyoming so that they can complete their obligation to practice here for at least 3 years to help them move back, or the rural training or dislocation caused as these guys round and do other things like that. And then obviously there's some expansion, the ability to make sure that we're recruiting our best and brightest into the program. And so so as you see, some of that's existing language, but what's here is making sure that or creating a statute so that the relocation costs associated with practice in Wyoming, fees and materials for medical board examinations, rural training, dislocations, student development, that those things are now included in the ability to use that money out of the income from the endowment, as well as some of the things that are expanded there. Then down below that you see kind of setting up what the parameters are there, that the amount of income expended is limited to no more than 4% of the rolling five-year average. So ultimately that is, then you start it and you kind of start the same thing on the other side. But I think that's where we're headed. There are some expansions in here. There's no question about it. And this body needs to decide if those expansions are appropriate.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, again, this is a great program. I think everyone understands that this program is near my heart. But I, when I look at the issue here, folks, is that the state of Wyoming was paying the full tuition cost for these folks, all these students, and then we were collecting tuition from the students at an appropriate rate. It's still less expensive to attend for a medical student to attend medical school through the WAMI program than it would be if they were going directly to the University of Washington or California or wherever you would go to medical school. It's still a bargain. It's a good deal. Do they have to incur student fees? Certainly they do. And in many instances, when you come back, there are programs to even pay off that debt. We've set up programs to pay off debt to recruit folks back. So we created the trust fund by saying we'll pay 100% of the fees, but we're going to take the student share of fees, put in this endowment. So now we're starting to say, okay, let's peel some of that income out. Some of it is to we're going to pay back for students or to lower their cost. This is a cost that all graduate students, postdocs would have, relocation costs. And these folks have pretty good jobs, and they can make pretty good incomes, and there are recruiting dollars. Whether this endowment is an appropriate, the income off is an appropriate use just to lower medical doctors. They're not doctors now. They're coming back. This will be, when you start talking about relocation, you're talking about after their residencies. And we're going to help them. We're going to use some of the fees that we collected and give back to them to a direct benefit. I'm not sure if that's the appropriate use. But I'm more concerned about that lower amount that goes to add for the cost in Wyoming. As far as I know, we're still paying the same tuition. It's still going to the University of Washington. And is this an additional cost that we've incurred? Is it reduce our cost into the to our collaborative organization? And there's no really accounting for it. It just happens. I don't see that we keep track of what's happening on the funds by making the statutory change. My question is this the very last time we'll ever see it? From now on, it'll be the university's fund to go to and tap, and there's no accounting of what it's spent for.
Any further debate? Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, and those are all very good points, and that's exactly, I think, the issue that's before you is whether or not you want to augment, the recruitment and maintenance of these doctors and help the system to come back, or whether you think that the level of support is adequate where it's at or could be adjusted. There's a couple mechanisms in here to do that. But I think that's exactly the question, and those are valid questions. Should we enhance the program and provide some additional benefits to those folks, or should now that they've gone through medical school and they're getting to the income producing portion of their career so far,
whether or not that's appropriate that they pay that themselves. And those are valid questions. You know, it's obvious that these funds could be reduced to be used to reduce the cost of that education to the state of Wyoming, and that's one of the things that we're citing here. There is some, I wanted to make sure that there is some accountability. If you look on the bottom of page 3, on or before October the 1st of each year, the university shall submit a report to the Joint Appropriations Committee, which is new language, but they've always had the obligation to report to our Joint Labor, Health, and Social Services Committee on the income fund and the expenditure. So there is, I think you have to be careful. You want to make sure this doesn't get absorbed into the university, which is in excess of $500 million per year. But we do have, I just did want to point out that there is reports that do come back to the Joint Health and Labor Committee now, and then this statute would also add this reporting comes back to the appropriations as well.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, when you look at the specifics here on this list, you're specifically talking about the relocation costs. You're at the point, as I understand it, where they've completed their training, they're going to go into practice. And they're just about to start the high earning portion. We've invested, Mr. Chairman, a lot of money in these people so that they will come back to Wyoming. And we're enjoying a pretty good return in terms of actually having them come here. But they're still at the point where they have not reached they get some earnings while they're residents, but they haven't really reached their full earning potential. Their inducements like this to come and practice in Wyoming are still potent attractants. And these are exactly the kind of doctors that we need here. Family practice doctors, still I think a majority of them are family practice. Some of them have gone into other specialties. But they're ones that have been trained in ways that particularly suit their going into practice here. If we want to get the return on investment, this is a good additional investment to get them to actually come here and get the yield that we're expecting from this program. So I think you need to consider that. And I would speak on and for the bill. The other things here look to me like a lot of sense, rural training, board examinations. We're getting them hooked just at the time that we need them. And some of the rural training that occurred during medical school may well have some additional expenses that I understand this will go for. So, Mr. Chairman, I would urge the Senate to adopt the bill. I think it's a good idea.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 85, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 85 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 60. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill Number 60, State Health Facility Missions Statutory Compliance, an Act Relating to Institutions of the State, sponsored by the Labor Committee, was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so the recommendation that House Bill 60 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment, and I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill Number 60, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 6, line 12.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, we'll explain Standing Committee Amendment first. It's quite simple. It's on page 6. We are changing a date in here There's a provision in here that was, you see on page 6, starting at line 11, that says to the people that are in the Life Resource Center already that as we change things around, we aren't going to force you out. Unless you can leave if you want to, but you're not going to be forced out. And that's important, Mr. Chairman. These are, I've been there, I've seen, met a number of these people. At least one of them is, one of our senators is a guardian for. They are some of the most severely involved with developmental disabilities in the state. They're frail. You could very well kill some of them if you force them out. And they've been there a long time. It's what they're used to. And we wanted to protect them. The problem, the health department came to the committee and said, we're planning to do a pilot project that's going to experiment with some of the people of the nature that we're going to plan to move there long term, make sure we can adequately get used to serving them there. We want to start April 1st. Some of those will be people that we would not plan to keep there long term, and they want to start with a pilot project, and they would be caught. Health department said, well, we could wait till July to start it, but we want to start it in April. And the committee said, oh, heck, let's change the date for where the people are protected to April 1st so that we don't catch the people in this residency. We had in committee the advocates for the patients at Wyoming Life Resource Center, and they didn't think that would cause any problem. So that's the amendment. I think it strengthens the bill. Mr. Chairman, I urge adoption. Be happy to answer any questions on it.
We are on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 60. Is there any further questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 60, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed House Bill 60. We are back on the bill. Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I will explain the bill. This bill comes to us as a result of the task force we've had studying the health department facilities, and it's legislation that's needed to implement the plan that we debated when we did the capital construction bill, and that goes beyond what we debated in that bill. And it makes sense to pass this now because it's the legislation that will be needed to implement that once the facilities are built. And I think it's wise for them to say, let's see if we can pass it before we build the facilities, because if the legislature has some problem with what we're doing, it's better to find out before we've started spending money on the Level 3 plan and design as we've authorized. Because that starts to be big money. So what it does is a number of definitions which are important because they're used later on. And then let's start looking at some of the specifics. On page 5, line 13, this is in the area of the Wyoming Life Resource Center. We're talking about people who are going to come in, Mr. Chairman, to the Life Resource Center, and it's individuals, and we've added the word, for whom an interdisciplinary team has determined the center is the most appropriate, least restrictive, and most integrated environment for the delivery of services as specified. Couple of points. The interdisciplinary team has been an important concept that's been used, Mr. Chairman, for some time. There was the original draft of the bill, and this bill repeals the section, if you look at the repealer on page 8, repeals the section that deals with the interdisciplinary team. a former member of this body who has a lot of expertise in this area wrote the committee and expressed a good deal of concern about that. So while we're keeping, for mechanical reasons, much as anything else, that repealer, we've reintroduced the key concept of using the interdisciplinary team here in this portion. So it remains intact, and I think it answers the concern. And one of the things you need to understand, these are the people that are going to come in. You see some of them listed below there, but there's a single eye that's not reproduced because we don't change it, and that's a developmentally disabled population that has been the traditional people that go to the Life Resource Center in Lander. So that's that section. Ms. Chairman, on page 6 was the provision we already discussed that we amended that protects the people that are already there. The other provisions there allow us to take to the Life Resource Center basically what's been called the geriatric psychiatric population at the state hospital. The concept, as you may recall from the capital facilities bill, is that we're going to move that population from the state hospital where they take up facilities that we want to use for the Title 25 population, the seriously mentally ill, where there's a big backlog and it's expensive for us in getting them in, and move that population to a more appropriate facility that we're going to construct up in Lander. That's what's authorized there. And then, Ms. Chairman, there's some other provisions. Relates, and there's some conforming amendments. And then on page 8, starting at line 1, there's an important concept, Mr. Chairman, that the Veterans Home, which is another facility operated by the Health Department, it has been the term they use because it's what the feds use as a domiciliary. If you read that as assisted living, you come pretty close. That's what it's always been. But we're going to add that with the language on page 8, line 9, may provide skilled nursing facility level care. And that's something new. There's been a request for a veterans nursing home, which this legislature has turned down. But the concept now is that at the facility in Buffalo, the veterans home there, we could add one or more units on a greenhouse concept, a much smaller nursing home unit that would fit the need for the people that are coming out of the domiciliary or assisted living portion of it as they get age and get more infirmities, be appropriate for them. And that's what that's authorizing. And then the next provision down page 8 is that that authorizes that, and then the next provision down page 8 exempts that and the other things we're building from the percentage requirements. If you're going to build a new nursing home in the state, Mr. Chairman, there has to be, or are you going to expand it, the existing nursing homes have to be at less than 85% capacity or more than 85% capacity so that we know there's a need for it, and that prevents expensive expansions that we would be stuck for the way the reimbursement formulas work, and that would cause the marketing of nursing home services to people who don't really need it. But these health department facilities, Mr. Chairman, are statewide, so it's not appropriate that they be caught in that formula. And that's what the provision starting on line 15 does, is exempt us from that. Mr. Chairman, that's a quick run through for a very important bill. You may get some communication from some of the advocates saying that they have the right under the Olmstead decision to go to particularly the Lander facility if they want to. Mr. Chairman, that's a misreading of the Olmstead case. It says that we can't put them in force them into a facility like Lander when they're in our care, unless it's the least restrictive, most appropriate environment. Olmstead does say that, but it doesn't say they have a right to go there if they could go to a less restrictive environment we have and we have to have. The right to say, no, that's more expensive. It's more than you need. We'll place you in a community provider setting. At the same time, Mr. Chairman, we are retaining the safety network features of the Lander facility, and recalling the debate in the budget, we are at risk of bankrupting some of the community providers, and if we do that, the safety net provision that's in here may become super important. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any further questions? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 60, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 60 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 63.
House Bill number 63, Healthcare Facility Receivership Act, an act relating to hospitals and healthcare facilities, sponsored by the Labor Committee, was referred to Committee number 10, Labor, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott. You've heard the reading of the bill, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 63 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment, and I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill number 63, standing committee amendment number 1, page 11, after line 19.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. And I yield to Senator Kraft for an explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to just explain the bill and kind of walk you through it and stick the explanation of the amendment in when we get there. I think it would be a little bit clearer that way. The genesis of this bill started back in May of this year, and maybe some of you heard of it. There were two nursing homes in the southern part of the state, including the one in my community, and the particular owner of those facilities hadn't been paying any bills, hadn't been doing anything financially, totally in debt, gives notice that the homes are closing, and asks the local managers to start moving out the patients. So you can only imagine the chaos that ensued. Private citizens in my community kind of stepped up. Food was not going to be delivered because the food bill hadn't been paid. One individual met the food truck with a cashier's check for $1,200 so that the residents would get food for a week. The hospital tossed in all kinds of medical supplies. People really stepped up. It's some really amazing work was done by our own Department of Health and by the governor's office. So the disaster was averted. We found a great new owner for the facility, and we moved on. But our Labor Health Social Services Committee looked at this issue and said, what do we do if this happens again and we're not prepared? And we realized we really needed a process that wasn't fueled by a crisis. That's usually the worst way to solve problems. So we discussed this extensively in the interim, and House Bill 63 is the result of our interim work. So what it does is it creates the Healthcare Facility Receivership Act, and this is for hospitals and those health care facilities who provide 24-hour care and are either licensed or certified by the Department of Health. Now, the process created by this bill is this. If a facility is operating without a license, or their license has been suspended or revoked or not renewed, or if there's any kind of situation, physical condition, practice, or method of operation that's causing imminent danger of death, or significant mental or physical harm to residents or patients, then the Department of Health may file a petition in the district court to appoint a receiver for that facility. The bill details how the service of process shall be made. It states that the court needs to hold a hearing within 10 days. And it also states that if the court finds conditions presented by the Department of Health, the way they said it, that they truly exist, they shall then appoint the director of the Department of Health as the receiver. And then details out further procedures there. Then following either a regular or an ex parte hearing, the director then may designate a qualified person, someone who's experienced in health facility management and free of any kind of conflict of interest with the healthcare facility to serve as their designee. And then it further states that the court will conduct hearings on status of the receivership every 6 months. Now, something that's really important to remember in this particular piece of legislation is the state is not taking ownership of the facility. What they're doing is they're preserving its assets. And that was the biggest issue that was faced in my community, is we found a really good buyer, but that buyer was really clear. They weren't interested in an empty building and one that was locked up. The assets had to be preserved. The bill discusses a lot of other powers and duties of the receiver, and it includes the caveat that the district court may either limit or expand the powers or duties of the receiver. And as I said, the goal isn't to own and run a facility. So the bill then also discusses the termination process. And that's either when the conditions no longer exist, they've been remedied, or the facility is ready to be closed, or as in luckily our case, the owner has successfully negotiated a lease or sale agreement with a prospective owner, and this is important too, who is licensed, can be licensed, and in the judgment of the Department of Health, can be expected to remedy the situations that got the facility and the issue and the problems they got in the first place. The bill then discusses a priority of expenses and claims, including administrative costs, wages, owed to employees, taxes. And then this is where the amendment comes in. And if I could draw your attention, it's on page 11, 920. Line 20, and this actually was suggested by the Attorney General's office. It basically just gives the court a little bit of latitude. It adds in a little flexibility and judicial discretion in that priority list. So they thought that that would help with situations where the existing priority list might not fit. So if it would be appropriate, Mr. Chairman, with that explanation of the amendment, I wonder if I could stand for any questions on the amendment, and if there are none, call for the question on the amendment.
We are on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 63. Are you ready for the question?
Yes.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 63, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are back on the bill. Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. And the only other thing I want to say about this bill is I lived through that trauma of over 90 medically fragile Alzheimer's patients, elderly citizens, and their families that are suddenly faced with this threat of closure and where are we going to go and where will my loved one live? And the fear and the anxiety that results in that. This, to me, was the most personally important bill that we discussed in the interim. And with that, I would stand for any questions or call the question.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I would add just two things to the presentation that was made. One, after this was all over, at I believe our August meeting, the Joint Interim Committee asked the director of the health department, looking back on his experience, what did he most need? And he said he needed the Good Receivership Act. And we looked, the other thing I'd add, Mr. Chairman, is we looked at the models from a number of other states. This is a little more restrictive than, in terms of its coverage, than you've seen in some other states, but I think appropriately so.
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 63, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 63 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You have heard the motion of the Majority Floor Leader. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried.
Where's our script? Oh, here we go. Thank you. Okay. All right. Message. I guess we're ready for messages from the House.
Messages from the House of Representatives, February 24, 2016. The following Senate files under third reading passed. The bills indicated below. Senate file number 7, Landfill Remediation Priority List, ayes 60. Senate file 23, NRC Agreement State Amendments, ayes 60. Senate file number 46, Asset Forfeiture 1, ayes 60. Senate file 49, Direct Primary Care Insurance Exemption, ayes 60. Senate file 56, Dietitian Reimbursement, ayes 60. Senate file number 59, Deferred Compensation Automatic Enrollment Amendments 2, ayes 60. Signed, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. From the House of Representatives, February 24-16, concurrence requested, message number 182. Mr. President, Senate file number 26, lapsing of appropriated funds amendments, passed on third reading in an amended form. Senate file 26, ayes 60, noes 0. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the amendments. Signed, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. From the House of Representatives, February 24, 2016, concurrence requested, message number 187. Mr. President, Senate file number 8, Bicycle and Pedestrian System Task Force, passed on third reading in an amended form. Senate file 8, House Amendment number 1, adopted to engrossed copy. Senate file number 8, House Amendment number unadopted to engrossed copy. Ayes 38, noes 22. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the amendment, listed amendments. Signed, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Good call. They like to feel better.
Standing Committee Report, February 24th, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 21, State Public Purpose Investments Revisions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
That's it? All right.
So is this clear the desk?
Okay, so Mr. Majority Floor, that clears the desk.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice President. I move that the Senate stand recessed until 2 p.m.
Thank you. Let's see, we report the
announcement.
Announcements. Thank you, Senator Meyer.
Mike.
Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet upon adjournment in Jonah Room S27 to consider the following bills. House Bill 66, Retired Firefighters. You got me?
Yeah, I do got you.
Okay. House Bill 49, Abandoned Vehicles 2, if introduced and referred. House Bill 39, Enhanced Speeding Fine Amendments, if introduced and referred. House Bill 40, Engrossed Operation Watercraft Under Influence of Alcohol, if introduced and referred. Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Committee number 2, Appropriations, will begin its work on the conference committee at 1 in the JAC committee room.
Thank you, Senator Ross. Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, State Public Lands, will meet tomorrow upon adjournment in Jonah 7, or S-27, to consider 3 bills, House Bill 41, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, House Bill 117, Pesticide Applicator Certification Program, and House Bill 36, Engrossed Livestock Dealers.
Thank you. Any other announcements? That's it. Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Well, we're going to go to lunch. All right. Motion passed. The Senate stands recessed until 2 p.m.